Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Past the hour, it is the 13th day of February 2015. For the superstitious among us, Friday the 13th. Bob Kincaid, human theremin. Yeah, no. It's Friday the 13th, but really it shouldn't be a problem for anybody unless you're a direct descendant of Philip the Fair of France or Jacques de Molay. And as between the two, Who knows what little bastards might be running about. But it doesn't have any effect on me or probably you. Yeah. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room, where we have a heck of a good time during the course of the program of an evening. Folks wandering by even now as we speak. Good evening, Gerald. Good evening, Labor Man. Good evening, Michael, and good evening, Texas T, all capably moderated by veteran, indefatigable chat room moderator and third stage guild navigator, Sparky, who has chosen not to fold space this evening and has not yet incarnated himself across space as Man Cave as well. But who knows? That could happen at any time, right? All kidding aside, it is Friday on the front porch. Of course, we reserve Fridays here at the Horn for what? Yes, for a roundtable discussion of extraordinary, ordinary people who are every bit as much expert as any of the talking heads who may wander, and more expert in point of fact, depending on which network you're watching, than any of the talking heads who may amble across one's television screen. Yeah, by it, well, you know, over there, that right wing gang of idiots. There's nobody who ever speaks on this program, on this network, who isn't smarter than just, well, than anybody else work at, and they get a check over at Fox and stuff. Yeah. So last night was a little bit frustrating. On the one hand, I was late getting to the microphone because I was driving through. It turned out the roads hadn't been cleared and consequently slowed me up, but I was late getting to the microphone, and then, lo and behold, we got hit by a buffer storm. Oh, God, knock wood. So far, so good. And, no man cave tonight, says Sparky, the third stage guild navigator taking tonight off. Not going to fold space. We had a bunch of buffering, and it made the program very difficult to listen to. Hopefully that will not be the case this evening. And as a consequence, I want to remind folks this evening, of course, it goes without saying, this is a listener-supported operation. It is not, there are no commercials here for buy gold now, or here's a vacuum cleaner that picks up bowling balls off mattresses made Swedish mattresses made with NASA space foam technology. No little capsules to grow hair on your slickety bald pate, or make anything else grow either for that matter, while listening to your Bose Wave radio. Mm-mm, no. We are simply a community that is self-supporting, and we keep all of this going by your kind contributions. And there is a challenge that remains on the table for this evening. For this evening. Simply in large part because things got so garbled last night, I imagine a lot of people just kind of went, talk to you later, Bob. And, you know, I'd do the same thing, so it's nothing personal. He can't listen. He can't listen. But, okay, so what it boils down to is this weekend is our buddy Tom in the Bay Area's birthday. Happy birthday, Tom. And Tom has put forward his Give Tom a Birthday Spanking Birthday Challenge. He's putting forward $200 that if it is matched, he'll double your contribution. $200 gets doubled to $400. And believe you me, that's important, especially in a itsy-bitsy, short little, tiny little freezing freaking month like February. Yeah, apparently it is now vogue. Well, the right wing's having a hissy because Barack Obama made a joke about how to say February, because there's that less than silent R in there, and oh my God, you know, the outrage machine is chugging at a white hot fury, and I do mean white. So the Tom's Hobbit style birthday spanking challenge is on the table, and thus far, it has $170 to go. I'm sorry, $150 to go. It has $150 to go. Then over on, he made a second challenge where he was going to Tom said he would double people's money, and this is important too. That challenge was only for first time contributors, and thank you very kindly to Yukio and to Brett, who jumped in on that. And we have only $25 to go on that, because what Tom was willing to do on that is double. In other words, triple the money. If there are $100 in first-time contributions, Tom said he would send along another $200 to make that go even further. So there's $25 remaining to go there. First-time contributions only. You have to email, say this is a, you know, just let me know this is a first-time contribution, or put it in the memo portion of the PayPal note, and then $150 remaining on the birthday spanking challenge. Hopefully, we will finish both of them up this evening. That would be a very, very nice thing to have happen. And by the way, thank you to Glenn for jumping in toward the end of the program last night or immediately thereafter on the birthday spanking challenge. Much appreciated. So, yes, it is Friday on the front porch, and we have a rich abundance of stuff to examine for the evening. Hey, look, America's favorite plagiarist is also vying now for America's favorite liar. Do you remember, it was a few years back, and anybody who's not a college football fan will not remember, but a few years back, a guy named George O'Leary was head football coach at Georgia Tech. And he had done reasonably well as head football coach at Georgia Tech. In point of fact, he had done so well that, lo and behold, that apex of college football success, University of Notre Dame, hired him to be their next football coach after whoever had been their previous football coach had proven himself to be a miserable failure. No, wait a minute. He hadn't proven himself to be a... Well, never mind. I can't remember. But anyway, Notre Dame wanted a new football coach. And so they hired George O'Leary. And after they hired George O'Leary, it turned out that George O'Leary had fudged a little bit on... his resume. He had said that he was things that he wasn't, had done things that he hadn't, and you know what? In the moral universe that is college football, it became entirely unacceptable for George O'Leary to go and be the head football coach of Notre Dame. because Notre Dame has this sterling reputation. We can't have people going to coach Notre Dame who've told lies about their careers, even if it was just a little itty-bitty lie about whether he got this degree or didn't get that degree. Just a little bit. That's the lie. Notre Dame could not tolerate that. It was something up with which they would not put. And there seemed to be a consensus that he shouldn't be the head coach at Notre Dame University. Fast forward to just a week ago, and the beloved anchor of the NBC Evening News, Brian Williams, said by all and sundry to be a really decent guy, got hung out to dry because he said something about his time being embedded with the military during our war against the people of Iraq, who incidentally had never done anything to us, and the war against whom had to be ginned up out of whole cloth by a group of psychopaths, sociopaths, and otherwise pathological liars, otherwise known as the Bush administration, being, including, but not limited to, George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, Douglas Feith, John Yoo, John Ashcroft, Alberto Gonzalez, Lickin' the Comb Guy, Paul Wolfowitz, all of whom conspired to create this pathetic tissue of lies that led to us slaughtering something on the order of 1 million innocent Iraqis, according to peer-reviewed scientific study done by Johns Hopkins University. Well, Brian Williams lied about one of his war experiences. And Brian Williams has been put on a 6-month unpaid suspension from NBC News. Damn it! And as our dear friend News Ninja Carol Baker pointed out, became the first and thus far only person to be punished for lying about anything related to the Iraq War. Yeah. Then there's today. And, of course, don't think for a minute that this is going to be anything on a par with, say, a college football coach who gets caught lying about his resume or, you know, somebody as important as a network news anchor who gets caught lying about which helicopter got shot at. No. This is entirely different. IOKIYAR. It's okay if you're a Rand. Because, well, we're talking about libertarian ophthalmologist Rand Paul and that thing on his head. Yes. It's charming. You may recall back during his halcyon days when Rand noted he was not a choir boy down at Baylor Baptist University in Waco, Texas. There are accounts of him being, and I don't want to put too fine a point on it, the kind of a pothead. And stories about him going to a state park, I believe it was. I think I recall horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner telling me he knew exactly where the place was. Where he tried to compel a female member of the Baylor swim team, wasn't it, to worship his bong, which he nicknamed Aqua Buddha. Since then, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, I'm rich, I'm rich, I'm comfortably well off, I'm socially secure. And that thing on his head. Have gone on to great things. He went on from Baylor University to attend medical school because, for some reason known but to God, the Duke Medical School let him in. I wonder if it was because his daddy was a congressman. Nah, couldn't be. And by all appearances, he actually finished his degree at Duke. And generally, when you get a medical degree, nobody looks in the back and goes, because it's just taken as read that you got the bachelor's degree that is the condition precedent to receiving a medical diploma. Or going to medical school, even. You got to go to medical school to get the medical diploma, but you got to have the bachelor's degree to get into medical school. Apparently not. Now, in the years since then, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head, have gone hither, thither, and yon, blathering and prating on about how he got a degree from Baylor University. Glenn Kessler, over at the Washington Post, he's their fact checker, decided to take a peek into Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head's claim that he had not a degree, but degrees from the Baptist down at Baylor University, Waco, Texas. At what is called the Lincoln Labs Reboot Congress event, TechCrunch founder Michael Arrington had an exchange with Rand Paul and that thing on his head. And he said, let's talk about economics, because maybe you can actually explain this to me. I have an econ degree, which means I know just enough not to understand any of what our government is, and you can't hear anymore. And Rand Paul says, mine's in biology and English, so this is going to be a great conversation. Mine, modifying the word degree in what Mr. Arrington previously said. Then they went on to talk later in the evening about Bitcoin, which has grabbed the fascination of libertarians everywhere. It was going to be a stateless currency, only it turned out to be a great big honking dodge. Bitcoin did. Yeah, kind of fraudy. So, during the discussion of Bitcoin, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head, said, this is just me. I have a biology degree, okay? But with Bitcoin, my concern always was whether or not something has real value. So I could imagine a kind of coin that was exchangeable. This gets back to the whole idea. Does money have to be exchangeable for something to be of value? Oh, he is a deep thinker! Or a word salad smith, I'm not sure which. This is where Mr. Kessler, the fact checker for the Washington Post, comes in. Because he went a-digging around. Liberal media! Right. Turns out, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and I are somewhat contemporary, because he left Baylor University in 1984 as a junior, when I would have been a junior up at Harvard on the Mon in Morgantown. Now me, I stuck around and finished my English degree. Yeah. And got it in 1985. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head, however, did not. Rand Paul, instead, absented himself from Baylor University. And, in fact, Baylor University never awarded Rand Paul, or that thing on his head, anything in the way of a degree, biology, English, basket weaving, aqua Buddha centered, self driven studies, independent, nothing. Not a sausage. And he's been, this is not the first time he's gotten caught. He's been fudging his collegiate experience for a while now. And I guess there are some circumstances where if you pass the MCATs well enough, you can bail out of your bachelor's degree and just jump right into medical school, but that's never really been offered up as a reason. And moreover, Rand Paul and that thing on his head keep running around talking about his biology and his English degrees. Oh, Rand, let's do sit down and talk about Vandata Prilly with his Shura Sutta, the Druth of March hath pierced to the root and bothered every vein and swish liqueur. Yeah, let's do, Rand! Oh, well. No big deal, right? Like I said, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Rand. And getting into Duke in his junior year and being able to bail out of his senior year, which I don't know about Duke, but often entails something called a senior thesis, which can be a bit of a booger. Ah, big deal. What does that matter? I mean, daddy's a congressman. You're paying cash at Duke. Presumably. I mean, obviously he's a member of the Senate of the United States. He's smart enough to have a real bachelor's degree. Or maybe even two. But you know what? The plagiarism, even though he was caught red-handed as a plagiarist, that never stuck either. Even though he had a person on his staff who was an unreconstructed, honest-to-goodness, no-kidding, pro-Confederacy secessionist, that didn't stick either. This won't either. If Ronald Reagan was the Teflon president, Rand Paul and that thing on his head, well, they're the, I don't know, what the T-Fal senator. T-Fal. Wasn't that a bad Vulcan character or something? Wasn't T-Fal the Vulcan with the whoopee cushion and the rubber chicken who refused to be unemotional? No. T-Fal was the libertarian Vulcan, who wanted everything in Vulcan society for himself. Yeah. Still, I thought it would be interesting to begin the conversation with dear Rand. And you know, somewhere in Kentucky Stan this Sunday, the 15th day of April, or 15th day of February. The Truth of March and Vandata Prilly. That's where that came from. This Sunday, the 15th day of February 2015, I'm sure there will be more than one or two ministers in the pulpit of the hundreds and thousands of churches that dot the Kentucky Stan byways and highways and corners and side streets. I'm sure there will be a handful of preachers out there preaching against the sins of bearing false witness. Sure. And a while later, maybe next time he's up for re-election, what do you want to bet those same preachers who were preaching against bearing false witness and violating the Ten Commandments are standing in the pulpit saying, "That Rand Paul is a man of God and abiding faith." Because I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. This certainly isn't enough to sink his presidential ambitions. his press staff just issues a press release and says, "Oh yeah, okay, sure." I mean, it's not like he didn't get any degrees from Baylor. Why do you hate America? And it's all over. And it barely gets any reporting time over on any of the major mainstream, real live, honest to goodness journalism outfits. No, it's not really news. You know what's news? A dog on a unicycle. That's some news. Let's go to YouTube. Still, just remember, and this is the real takeaway. You can tell something about a culture based upon what it will tolerate from its various and sundry segments and sectors. The culture, which is largely controlled by the wild-eyed denizens of the right wing, the culture would not tolerate a little bit of, what are you going to call it, embroidery on one news anchor's experiences in Iraq. The culture won't tolerate fibs about a football coach's resume. But when it comes to a Republican member of the most powerful so-called deliberative body in the world, if you're a Republican, everything's okay. Just like everything will be okay for, how about Jim Inhofe, senator from Oklahoma stan? This one's kind of interesting. Jim Inhofe has shown himself to be a liar, too. Jim Inhofe is one of those people, and like John McCain and Lindsey Graham, John, Marsha, Lindsey. They're war hawks where Ukraine is concerned. They want to get the Ukraine all nice and gunned up and warlike and bloody and covered up in goo and gore and veins in my teeth and all that Arlo Guthrie stuff. And in furtherance of that, Senator Jim Inhofe, speaking in front of the Senate Armed Services Committee, brought some photographs for show and tell to the world's most august deliberative body. Mm-hmm. Now, why he was testifying to the committee is beyond me. But that's for greater minds than mine to suss out. But he was. And he had prepared remarks, which means that he was not just talking off the cuff and sort of got his facts squirrely. Nope, these were prepared, typed up, everything, read in a delicious monotone into the microphones for the congressional record. He held up some photographs and said, "These photographs were given to me by Lieutenant Colonel Semen Semenchenko." Oh, really? Guy's name's Semen. "The commander of Donbass Volunteer..." Goddess of irony, don't miss a lick. "Goddess of irony..." "The commander of Donbass Volunteer Assault Battalion and newly elected member of the Parliament of Ukraine, during our meeting on 13 November last year. And there's some pictures of tanks and Russian flags and shit like that. And he said, the first set of pictures show Russian troops in T-72 tanks, BTR armored personnel carriers, and BMP infantry fighting vehicles entering eastern Ukraine, waving Russian flags. This is not simply supporting separatists. It is an invasion of the Ukraine by Russia. The second set of pictures were taken by Ukrainian soldiers on the front line in eastern Ukraine. With me so far? So then, thoroughly in love with his own heroism, Jim Inhofe's office turned photographs over to a publication called the Washington Free Beacon. That's a right wing website, and they immediately put up a big old link, exclusive. Senator Inhofe's photographs of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Yeah. However, because it's online, and because people are kind of interesting and interested in stuff that pops up on the interweb tubes, yeah, turned out not to even be remotely true. Those exclusive photographs of the Russian invasion of Ukraine were from 2008. One of the photos was from the Russian war with Georgia. With egg slap-dab all over its face, the Washington Free Beacon via Adam Credo. I'm telling you, Credo, she don't miss a lick, the goddess of irony. Following publication of this story, serious questions have been raised about the authenticity of some of the photographs provided by Senator Jim Inhofe, R. Oklahoma. We are investigating further and will update as necessary. Mm-hmm. Sure you will. Now, remember, this is the same Jim Inhofe who says that climate change is a monstrous hoax. That we're all just being taken to the cleaners by those liberal commie climate change con artists. What we need to do is burn more coal! Burn more oil! Planet's not warm enough! You been outside lately? It's cold! So, inquiry was made over to Jim Inhofe's office, who said, we thoroughly checked our sources again prior to releasing the photos, and we felt confident proceeding because the photos also match reporting. We are currently making calls to our sources. We felt confident. Felt is a synonym for believed, both of which mean that intellect and brain power were not at all involved in the process. Mm-hmm. And that why were they confident? Because the photos matched the reporting. I remember something a decade or so ago, do you? It was called the Downing Street Memo. You remember the Downing Street memo? This was over when George W. Bush was dragging his pet poodle Tony Blair into the bloody quagmire that turned out to be Iraq, and from which something on the order of 5,000 American servicemen and women did not come home, and thousands more came home shattered. Shattered to the point of, 10 years later, suicide, homicide. Yeah. Wasn't the Downing Street memo the one that said, we fixed the facts to fit the intelligence, or some phrase like that? Yeah. Well, this is that. We were confident proceeding because the photos also match reporting. Well, I guess so if you're talking about the reporting being of the Russian invasion of Georgia in 2008. Oh, he didn't say which reporting. Yeah. So imagine that, another Republican paragon of virtue who just sits before, but hey, you know, it's the Senate Armed Service Committee. It's run by Republicans now anyway. So Senator Inhofe could have sat there at the table and said, 'twas brillig when the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogroves and the mome raps outgraved. And the Republicans on the Armed Services Committee would have said, harumph, harumph, we need to get a good war going in the Ukraine, the flag is falling, oh my God. Wouldn't they? Of course they would. Is Lindsey Graham on the Armed Services Committee? I'll bet he is. John, my smelling salts, I am so perturbed for those dear freedom fighters in the Ukraine. Goodness me. The fainting couch. Where's my fainting couch? And again, so, you know, we'll catch them. Catch him, and so what? Because again, IOKIYAR. And the timid Democrats. I mean, did Senator Inhofe have to be sworn or anything? Well, no, he's a senator. I mean, he'd never lie to another senator, would he? Of course not. Silly. So, yeah, it's not like we don't have stuff to work with this evening. But it's not every day you get two Republican senators caught overtly lying at the same time. But don't worry, there won't be any hearings. Oh, no. And there won't be any sanction or censure, because we don't do that to Republicans. I mean, that's something that's only reserved for Democrats who, oh, I don't know, to have sex with someone that Republicans don't like or something. Not for trivialities like trying to lie us into more warfare. By the way, I just saw the topic change in the Horn chat room. The Skype bat signal is lit or lighted. The breadcrumb trail has been laid out. If you want to participate in this evening's extraordinary, ordinary roundtable of conversation, you are welcome so to do. If you've never done so before, just send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, on Skype. If you've never used Skype before, you'll be amazed at just how very simple it is to use. And it's also free. No phone charges apply. Where to go? How about a little wander back here to almost level west by Cole, Virginia? Isaac put me onto this story earlier, and at first there wasn't a whole lot of detail, but that detail is now beginning to emerge. It's the story of a 68-year-old pastor named Ronald Browning. He was the pastor of, notice we're using the past tense, so you know how this is going to wind up. He was the pastor of Cool Ridge Community Church. And Camille Brown, age 19, a student at my alma mater, apparently, West Virginia University, well, Camille Brown, who apparently had no contact or no knowledge of Pastor Ronald Browning. 19-year-old Camille Brown entered his home and bludgeoned him to death. They found Pastor Ronald Browning's 68-year-old body in a pool of blood, cause of death being blunt force trauma to the neck and head. The Beckley police are saying that the murder appeared to be random in nature. Detective Bragg said the case is disturbing to him because there's no motive. Just happened. 19-year-old Camille Brown has been charged with first-degree murder. Of course, here in West Virginia, we do not have the death penalty, but just wait. Our new 83 years in the wilderness Republican teabagging, piss-yellow flag-waving Republican legislature, they'll get to it in short order. Try. But we don't have the death penalty in West Virginia right now, so the most that Camille Brown, 19 years old, will face is life in prison without the possibility of parole if, in fact, she is convicted. Although they are not psychologists, the police noted that Camille Brown did appear to be, in their words, paranoid. They might have reached that conclusion when, in the course of interviewing her, she said, "No, I didn't know him." And hockey puck. "I was just following God's plan. I was just following God's plan." At present, the Raleigh County Prosecuting Attorney's Office has not made a decision as to whether or not to present this case to the grand jury because Ms. Brown is presently under psychological or psychiatric evaluation to find out if she's even competent to stand trial. Because when the authorities, with a decent amount of evidence, determine that you are the murderer of another person whom you didn't even know, and they ask you, why'd you do it? And you say, I was just following God's plan. Well, in the rest of day-to-day life, when you say I was just following God's plan, why'd you give that homeless guy $20? I was just following God's plan. Nobody thinks twice. But when you say that in the response to the question, honey, why'd you kill him? That sets off the alarm bells. And I'm sure this story will have no small amount of notoriety as it proceeds through the system. Who knows? Not that I've got my purple, dry-rotted purple velvet robe with the frayed appliqué glow-in-the-dark moon and stars and will thee kiss me in the dark baby in glow-in-the-dark paint across the chest on or anything. But, something just tells me, I've got a notion, that at some point, some God-fearing, Bible-believing, upstanding Christian member of the new Republican majority in the West Virginia legislature will stand up and say, see, this year is why we need the death penalty in West Virginia. Glory. And all those Gadsden flag-waving, teabagging members of the West Virginia legislature's new majority will harumph all over, harumph, harumph! And they'll talk about how the death penalty would be a deterrent to people like Camille Brown. Well, okay, maybe it wouldn't be a deterrent to Camille Brown, but maybe it would be a deterrent to the voices in Camille Brown's head, one of whom was apparently telling her he was Almighty God, which, of course, he wasn't. I mean, couldn't possibly be. I mean, there's nothing in the Bible where God just indiscriminately kills people for no particular reason. I mean, it's not like there's a story in the Bible where some little children laugh at how bald a prophet is, and God sends a bear to just maul those little children into tiny little children pieces. No. I mean, it's not like there's a story in the Bible where God just nukes a couple of towns because he doesn't like the way they behave. No. The voice of God would never appear in somebody's head and tell them to kill someone. Well, I mean, the voice of God has appeared in people's heads, have been heard in people's heads, telling them to kill people. But it wasn't a good Christian God. It was that Allah fella. He's telling people to lop people's heads off for smoking now over there, is what I'm told. Yeah. My, oh my, oh my. Here's what's interesting, though. While this story did reach the wire services, no doubt about it, the headlines aren't saying 19-year-old Christian bludgeons 68-year-old pastor to death. Whereas, on the other hand, that is certainly being said, Atheist kills three Muslims. And I do not in any wise mean to take away from or to diminish the horror of what was done down in North Carolina to those three innocents. As News Ninja Carol Baker pointed out, whether he was an atheist or not, there's one thing for sure. that murder was made a lot easier via easy access to a firearm. Really kind of hard to get around that. And then this, speaking of the horrors in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. I thought to save this for Moran Monday and make this the Moran Monday media nominee, but no, it fits, so we'll deal with it this evening. You know how a little bit ago I said, no, that's not important. What's important is a dog on a unicycle. Let's go to Patricia now in the Action Team News Center coverage unit. And what's this about a dog on a unicycle, Patricia?
Well, Phil,
there is nothing that cannot be made stupid and supercilious by the for-profit media. Witness Inside Edition. Craig Hicks murdered these three young people. It was immediately put out as a parking dispute. Shortly after that, it became atheist kills Muslims. For-profit media didn't have any problem blaming the atheism on the murders. Really hard to get him to say, Christians kill... No. Well, enter Inside Edition and Deborah Norville. Deborah Norville was the morning news anchor, or the morning anchor, morning team person, whatever, the morning half of the Today Show a million years ago, before the arrival of... Katie Couric. Well, she was unceremoniously let go in favor of Katie Couric, and apparently she washed ashore at the studios of Inside Edition. Where Deborah Norville added this to the quality of the discussion of these horrifying murders.
A tragic shooting over, of all things, police say a parking space. Three college students in North Carolina are dead. Their neighbor has been charged. Initially, some said it was a hate crime because the victims were Muslim. The cops say they believe the dispute was over parking at an apartment complex. Now, finding a parking space is one of those things that can push some people over the edge, but there is always a way to find a spot at the mall.
What? Now, visually, and Deborah Norville is standing there in front of a telescreen. And for a few moments there, they had photos, a photo up, the same one everyone has seen of the three young people, caps and gowns, pride, beautiful, magnificent, exciting day, graduation, all of that. But that dissolves to a graphic that appears to show a bunch of binary code, you know, sort of matrix-like of ones and zeros, and the words, breaking the code. And yes, Deborah Norville did just segue from the cold-blooded massacre, execution-style killings of three young people into you can always find a parking spot at the mall. And by the way, that line about, but police say it was a dispute over a parking space. Time out.
Was it a time?
We are so blood-sodden in this country. We are so gunned up. That we just tell, oh, you know, that's a shame. That's a pity. That's just awful. But we also say, well, you know, these things can happen in parking disputes. Three people can get bullets. Three young people, three beautiful young people, three innocent young people who hadn't done a damn thing can get bullets in the head, you know, over a parking dispute. Because, well, hell, it's America, and that happens in America. Time out. It's time for an international inquiry. Horn style. Hello, Horn listeners in Australia, Japan. Hello, Horn listeners in China, Germany. Hello, Horn listeners in the United Kingdom, in Sweden, in Finland, in Norway. Hello, Horn listeners in Mexico, in Canada, Ireland. Greece, Italy, Spain, any of you, I'm asking directly for your input here. Email's fine, Twitter's okay, Facebook, sure, bobkincaid@gmail.com. At Bob Kincaid, Bob Kincaid, the horn, the phone, Skype. However you care to reach out. Because, see, even those of us who are opposed to gun violence, who think that this country has a horrifying disease, we recognize that, yes, well, damn. This is America. And in America, people shoot people over parking spaces. Over texting in a movie theater. Over Skittles and Arizona iced tea. People get shot by police for walking in the street. They get taken down by police for walking on the sidewalk in Madison, Alabama. You know, walking while Hindu. It really happened. At least the cop's been charged. I mean, it's a misdemeanor and everything, so he doesn't have to really worry about any significant prison time. Whew, 58-year-old man. But this is, but tell me, I just want to know, I'm kind of itching. When was the last time you picked up an Australian newspaper, Chinese newspaper, Finnish newspaper, Norwegian newspaper, Swedish newspaper, Dutch newspaper, German newspaper, British newspaper, Irish newspaper, any of the others? When was the last time you picked up a newspaper and saw three people murdered over parking dispute? Never? Never? Because I'm guessing your answer is never. Parking dispute. Three people dead. Wolverines! I'm sure if I searched hard enough, I would find a story of where somebody got shot over in America over free parking on the Monopoly board. No, you don't get all the money in the middle. It's not in the rules. Bang! The family of the victims is righteously furious that this has been so casually and cavalierly tossed out as a parking dispute. This is not a boating accident. The family has spoken and said that the victims had in the past mentioned the fact that Craig Hicks had warned them about parking in that parking spot, because it was a visitor's spot, and that visitor's spot is where my wife parks. And as he'd say that, he'd open his jacket and kind of show them the Freedom Protector. Right? Because visitor spots are reserved for Americans. Well, okay, they were American too, but I mean, you know, she had the headgear and stuff. Marty pointing out, obviously, Deborah Norville was infected by O'Reilly before he went off to Radio Rwanda. I don't think, was she at? No, I don't think she was. Because it's America. Steve with an email. Subject line, Nora Norblap. So let me get this straight. There's no reason to kill someone over a parking place because there are plenty of parking spaces to go around, not because the notion is crazy and people have too many damn guns. Precisely. And we aren't fully even into the hockey puck zone of Deborah Norville. Let's back up just a hair.
Some said it was a hate crime because the victims were Muslim. The cops say they believe the dispute was over parking at an apartment complex. Now, finding a parking space is one of those things that can push some people over the edge, but there is always a way to find a spot at the mall. Jim Murray helps you break the code.
Unbelievable.
Fights over parking spots are happening all across the nation, and they can get downright violent, as seen in these YouTube videos. These people were nearly run down as a driver violently plows into their car. Another angry driver was so furious, he crashed into a parked car just to squeeze into the space he wanted. And watch as this angry man, a dentist of all people, actually shoves a driver away from his car and gets into a fist fight because he's apparently upset that the car is blocking a parking lot entrance. He was convicted of assault. No question about it. Looking for a parking spot can be incredibly frustrating. But today, we are breaking the code, showing you what works and what doesn't when seeking out a parking spot. I headed to a crowded parking lot at a mall in Manhattan Beach, California. I start my search for the perfect spot by using the technique known as circling.
No, stop it. I don't know how much more of this I can do. I use the technique known as circling. That's a technique? I thought that was just what you did. But wait! This started off as a... I guess I should be grateful that they didn't invite... have report, you know, ace reporter Steve Circle Jerk do a a piece on the relative merits of shooting people in the head with 9mm versus 45 caliber handguns. This is the for-profit media. This is soft news, not hard news. Don't worry. Deborah Norville is not going to lose her job for having characterized, once again, contrary to the wishes of the victim's family, she's not going to lose her job for characterizing this as just another parking dispute and then reinforcing it with you know, ace reporter, you know, Malcolm Dickhead. No.
Look and look. Taken.
I circle and circle, but no luck. Next, I try a different method known as stalking. It's not as bad as it sounds. It's...
But it is, Malcolm, when the stalking winds up with three recent... Oh, Jesus.
It's just when you follow shoppers exiting the mall.
Here we go. Folks are returning to their car.
I followed this couple, hoping it will lead to an open parking spot. Turns out they're not leaving, just grabbing something from their car.
Damn.
But mathematician Joe Pagano says he's cracked the crowded mall parking dilemma.
I developed this actually because I was trying to show how mathematics can actually work in the real world.
Oh my God. All this, and the lead-in is a 20-second reader about three kids who were murdered in cold blood by Wayne LaPierre call him? A good guy with a gun. Doctor Who pointing out in the chat room, people fighting over parking spots. This is what it has come to in this country. Poverty is at a record high, but I've got to get that parking spot! February 13th, 2015. America. Because of the fetishistic obsession with firearms on the part of a noisy plurality in this country, three innocents with promising lives gunned down over a parking space? Or gunned down over being Muslims in a parking space in America? Because see, maybe nobody else sees it, but I see a bright line running between this and whether it's Hannity or O'Reilly or Savage or Limbaugh or any of the right-wing teabagging asshats in Congress. Oh, the Muslims! The ISIS! The ISIL! Oh, my God! They're going to cut your head off. Lindsey Graham. They're going to get us all killed! America. Yeah. Robert in Australia writing in, three people murdered over parking dispute. Bottom line, we don't have handguns in this country. They are illegal. So you never see the headline, three people murdered over parking dispute. I once witnessed a dispute at a popular beach. I'm sure if a gun had been available, someone would have been shot that day. The driver demanding that the spot was his came across as someone with very little self-control. And yet, even though they have no access to firearms, I'm guessing Robert and any number of our other Aussie friends would probably take quite a bit of umbrage at having Wayne LaPierre or the ghost of Charlton Heston or any of the Ted Nugent tell them that they are somehow not as free as we, you see. How free are the corpses now learning to come to grips with life buried in the ground now? How free are they? How free is Craig Hicks, cooling his heels in a North Carolina holding facility pending trial? Why did Craig Hicks feel like a firearm was his best and only recourse? The hell ever happened to calling the property management company? Or, and I'll just be a jerk here, whatever happened to the shithead satisfaction of just keying the car? Or slashing the tires? Why did he jump straight to three bullets in three heads? Because Merca. Because somehow or another, that parking space became what? A totem for the fury that he felt against people for being Muslim? I mean, you key a car, you're an asshole. You slash tires, you're an asshole. Hopefully you get caught. But if you shoot three people in the head, you're a murderer. Or, among that noisy plurality in Merca, a patriot defending freedom against the headloppers. Jesus, Mary and Joseph. Stephen China noting, circling, triangling, octagoning, whatever. I feel so stupid. We used to call that looking for a parking spot. On the other hand, circling is what a vulture does when it smells a corpse, right? Or maybe when it smells a news story. Yeah. Regards, Steve in China. Thank you, Steve. Marty with tongue planted firmly in cheek. Not as free to die as of extreme lead poisoning with extreme prejudice. By the way, you know those three weren't innocent. They were Muslims, and thus deserved to die. Marty says, by the way, I'm not buying that the guy's an atheist. I don't think agnostics and or atheists have quite the entitlement complex as believers. I don't think... See, whenever you run across a Christian killer... Because I've been told this in the past. Hey, Bob, it's unfair to point out that they were killers and Christians. I mean, I'm a Christian. I'm not a killer. Right? But it is apparently fair to charge killers who don't have a god with being murderers for atheism. Yeesh. And by the way, because he has been so readily and quickly branded an atheist, the trial might be a little interesting. Because of where it's going to take place, to wit, North Carolina, Stan. On the one hand, you're going to have members of the jury pool who will see that he murdered a Muslim, and if not sanction it, at least understand that, well, we're at war with them people. Never mind the fact that we weren't at war with these people. Then there's the other side, and this is where it gets complex. The jury, hearing that the man is an atheist, which they never should, but I'm sure the prosecution will figure out a way to bring in, at the mention of the word atheist, will begin looking, will begin braiding nooses in the jury box. Because North Carolina stand, and I'm not sure if Ron and Raleigh's listening or not, or any of our other any of our other North Carolina contingent, but they do have the death penalty in North Carolina, correct? Yeah, the minute there are some people who will be headed for that jury box who, the minute they hear the word atheist, is, get a rope! Horizontal crucifixion's too good for them. Wow. So, here endeth the filibuster. I've run over by about 16 minutes. It's time to go to the... time to go to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, capably moderated each and every evening by our very own Sparky. A reminder, if you've never participated in the Extraordinary Ordinary Friday on the Front Porch Roundtable, you can do so by sending a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, on Skype. Okie dokie. And again, we have, for the remainder of the evening, we have a $200 challenge on the table. It is Tom's birthday spanking challenge. There's $150 out there remaining to this $200 challenge that will enable us to keep paying bills if it is met. $150 remains. If we get that $150 taken care of, then for his birthday, in celebration of his birthday this weekend, and happy birthday, Tom, Tom will double it. The PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com. The address is... for those of you who prefer to participate by the postal service, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, WV 25801. Reminder, checks, money orders should be made payable to The Horn, not to Bob Kincaid. And so let's take a break. We already have Bill on the Gizmo line. We will get the Skype line fired up and get the roundtable going. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. little something from a million years ago, namely Adam and the Ants, Car Trouble. Friday on the front porch on the horn. Time to get the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable started. Good evening, Sparky. Hello?
Caught me off guard.
Oh, sorry. Scared me. I was afraid I'd stepped on a cord or something.
I had my mic muted and I was on another tab.
No worries.
I'm seeing a lot of ants today. Speaking of ants.
Oh, right, because it's spring there, right?
Well, it feels like it, yeah. I got the little holes popping up all over the ground, and I was out. Oh, Gerald. I didn't tell you the temperature. Shut up.
That was a preemptive shut up, Sparky.
But anyway, the little ant holes are opening up all over the place, and I was out doing some weed whacking with my weed eater today, and I hit an ant hill, and ants crawling all over my shoes and everything. The joys of...
They're not fire ants, are they?
No, they're just...
Ordinary
annoying ants that come out of the ground.
Well, we don't have any of those here right now, Sparky. We
got mosquitoes now too.
You're gonna be a long time getting any sympathy out of me right now.
That's why I ain't hanging in the man cave.
We're crossing the below zero barrier for the next few days, I think, at least in terms of wind chill. Got down the single digits last night. It's going to warm up, and the overnight low tonight is only going to be 18. Overnight low tomorrow night, Saturday night, however, 3. Overnight low Sunday night, 5. 2 days of relative respite with lows of 19 and 16. Then we're back to 3 again come Wednesday.
You could be in Boston.
You know, I'm trying to look for my little rays of sunshine. Thank you for providing it.
So you're going to get hit with a hellacious blizzard.
Of course, around here what they say is, it's too damn cold to snow. That is the thing we say here, it's too cold to snow.
Well, we say it ain't cold enough to snow yet.
Well, I was always just kind of amazed by the, and it said authoritatively here, too cold to snow, as if the snow itself has some sort of threshold. Which, I mean, there's weather that even snow won't come out in.
My only experience of thunder snow was right here in Red Bluff working on a Shasta College expansion campus here in 2009.
Well, I got a note from my sister down on the Gulf Coast where they're getting ready to start Mardi Gras. Well, I mean, Mardi Gras is going on. Mardi Gras. You know, Fat Tuesday is Tuesday, and they're going to be freezing their tuchuses off down there. Now, I mean, it's bad enough when it gets down to one or two here. You get it, you know, along the Gulf Coast, you get it down to, 15, and people have a fit.
Oh, I can imagine.
So, let's see, who else do we have? Good evening, Betsy.
Hey, Bob.
How in the world are you?
I'm doing good. Hold on. I got you on speaker. I'm doing well. I wanted to talk to you for a bit, but I will wait till other people join the call, about something that happened at school this week that has me a little bit discouraged about boys and girls and Texas politics and the almighty sports.
Oh, dear. We also have joining us this evening Carol Abel in Australia.
Hi, Carol.
She was there.
She shows she's still there. Well, we'll come back. I know Gerald's with us.
Oh, I got a quick message from Greg in San Diego, the Malloy chat room moderator.
Yeah.
He says it was 87 today.
Oh, shut up, Greg. I love you, but, you know,
It was 72 here, and I've been walking to work all week.
Shut it, Betsy. I'll just spread it around.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for picking up some of my slack there, Carol.
Yeah. We won't discriminate. We'll spread it around. Everybody, we share the shut it. I mean, it's 23 here right now.
Yeah, and in the studio here, thanks to propane and electric heat, I've gotten it all the way up to 60.
Thank God for fossil fuels, right?
Well, no. Yes.
So how are you, Bob?
Freezing. Went out and about a little bit today. Went up to the Wiggling Pig to see what was in the hot case. And even the hot case had icicles on it.
It's too damn cold to snow, though.
It's too cold to snow. I don't know. I think if I left 70 proof liquor outside tonight, it'd probably freeze.
Stand a very good possibility.
No, I'm one of those people who, back when I kept a bar, when people would come over and visit and stuff, I always kept my vodka in the freezer. And like a dummy, one day I bought a bottle of the 70 proof Smirnoff because it was cheaper, and I don't drink vodka. It's like neat. Vodka to me smells like the same stuff when I open the little cleansing, thingy to check my blood sugar. It smells the same thing as the alcohol and as needle cleaner. But I always kept my vodka in the freezer, and I bought a cheap bottle of Smirnoff one time, 70 proof, and pulled it out, and damned if it didn't have ice crystals in it. So
good stuff.
Yeah, the good stuff. I don't know if there's anything can. It was cold last night, and I mean it's going to be hateful tomorrow.
Yeah, it's that. I don't like it. Yesterday the wind was pretty bad. Wasn't all that cold, but
yeah, and the wind's supposed to be. I saw one report, and yeah, I never know quite how to feel about wind chill factor. I mean, if the temperature really is 20 below, it is. The warning going out was in some of the like Pocahontas County Highlands of West Virginia, that the wind chill factor could feel like 50 below tomorrow night.
Well, that's part of Canada up there anyway. Well, I always thought so.
Yeah, there's just, Montreal, Toronto, Pocahontas County.
Marlington, Ed Ray.
Oh, God, the needling's even coming from Montana. Bill in Helena just sent me an email and said, not to rub it in too much, but it's 61 and clear in Helena Valley right now.
Shut it, Bill.
But remember, climate change is a monstrous hoax.
Of course it is. Why else is it 23 degrees in the the middle of February?
Yeah. There we go.
Aren't you supposed to be cold in the middle of February?
Yeah.
Not if the globe's warming, Sparky.
Oh, okay.
Yes, we are.
And moreover, it's the wild swings. I mean, I think you'd have to agree, Gerald, this has been a pretty mild winter, hasn't it?
Yes, much milder than it was last winter. We had a lot more snow, and it was a lot colder last winter. But, I'm just unfairly paid out in it all day, so what would I know?
Oh yeah, that's true. You're not like me sitting back here in a modestly heated studio. You're out in it.
But it's okay, Bob, because I'm unfairly paid.
You have an unfairly high wage.
That's right.
I noticed our new West Virginia Democratic Party vice chairman, a man named Regan, had a pretty interesting op-ed in the Gazette. In the last day or so, and I couldn't help chiming in that he forgot to mention that a millionaire with a used jet for sale says that construction workers make an unfairly high wage.
I saw that, and I saw your comment, and I liked it because it's true.
And oh, did you see the latest thing that came out? Do you remember there was a legislator, a Republican from Boone County, who demanded his pay even though he never showed up for the legislative session because he was off being like an Air Guard guy or something. Remember that guy?
Yeah. He represents Lincoln and Boone.
I couldn't remember if he was the same guy, but a Boone County Republican has asked people who were going to come out to protest for fair wages on Monday, won't y'all please just stay away and do it a different day? This is a day for veterans, and it's unseemly for y'all to be a protesting at the same time we're trying to honor our veterans.
Do what?
I wouldn't lie to you.
President's Day. Veterans Day's in November.
Well, no, it's Veterans Day at the legislature. Let me see if I can find the statement.
I'm trying to think of the guy's name you're talking about, though, the other one that didn't even show at all. The whole legislature, he was out the whole session, never cast one vote, never even went to the Capitol. What is his name?
Here we go.
Eldridge or something like
okay,
that.
Okay, maybe it's not the same guy then. Delegate, this is a press release from Delegate Nelson J. Delegate Josh Nelson, R. Boone, has sent a letter to Senate Minority Leader Jeff Kessler requesting that he change the date of the planned protest on Monday, February 16th to better celebrate Veterans Visibility Day. On Veterans Visibility Day at the legislature, a yearly celebration, there will be Medal of Honor recipients, Purple Heart recipients, combat veterans, as well as Gold Star mothers whose sons and daughters have given the ultimate sacrifice in service to our country. Okie doke. I'm certainly not making sport of that. Here's the quote.
Of course not.
While I very much support the right of anyone to come and protest, demonstrate, or generally be a part of the legislative process, I must ask respectfully, please change the date so the focus of this day remains on the heroic and brave men and women who fought and sometimes died to give us our right to a free country. It is a matter of respect, and I would hope you seriously consider changing the date so that we may correctly honor those that have allowed a government by the people and for the people. Correctly honor. You see, if you show up to assert those rights that these veterans gave of themselves to protect and in some cases died for, if you show up to assert those rights, you're not correctly celebrating the veterans.
It's a holiday, and they're not going to be there anyway.
Actually,
so
I looked into that. They are. They're in session that day, which I can't figure out.
Surprising. Well, they do operate separately from the state. So, you know, you got to earn that 20 grand plus expenses. 60 days is just not enough.
It's a photo op day for them, so they can get up in front of cameras and show how patriotic and everything they are.
Actually, it's probably going to be the Republicans looking out the window at all the labor out there saying, well, look at those dumbasses out in the cold. Because I've kind of gotten the feeling that it's kind of in the legislature now, it's with the Republican leadership, we're in power now, we're going to do what we want. And that's pretty much been the way it has been.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, note coming in from Darlene. Darlene says, it's downright balmy where most of you folks are. It's 6 degrees here in Northwest Connecticut, as you like to pronounce it, Bob. Wind chill factor is -8. Ew, yuck.
I got a report from Steve in Canada. It was -18 degrees Celsius there.
So I guess we have to shut it too, Gerald.
Well, as long as Sparky shuts it first, I guess it'll be all right.
I can't help what my weather is, but today's news was depressing with the mega drought thing.
Well, there is that. We've got plenty of water.
But
we just put poison in it and pump it into the ground.
You're right.
To get gas.
What I found interesting about that mega drought report was that they're not talking about California.
They're talking about the Southwest and the plains. Right?
Yeah. The Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's back up a minute. We've said our okay. Hey, wow, Michael has joined the conversation. Good evening, Michael.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I think you've probably got a pretty good idea.
Yeah, I'm still hung up on the fact that there's definitive proof that a senator lied, bald-faced lied in front of everybody with pictures of a false invasion trying to get us into a war. I don't know about you, but for some reason I can't move past that. That's just the gall. You know, and why isn't it on every newspaper, on every television, and the first thing that anybody's talking about? I know why, but, you know.
No, Michael, I think there's a deeper why. I mean, IOKIYAR pretty well covers it, but why does it cover it? Because there is a Republican outrage machine that is there if a Democrat walks out of the restroom with a piece of toilet paper stuck to his or her heel, the Republican outrage machine is there to, why do they hate America?
Yeah.
We don't have that outrage machine. And yet this is outrageous conduct.
Yeah. My 14-year-old daughter was sitting next to me in my car as we were driving home listening to that and listening to that news report after the three people were shot. And the look on her face, you know, it's just it's bad. You know, it's just horrifying what's going on right now.
Well, those outrage machines are expensive. I mean, first you've got to buy a Supreme Court. You've got to buy a cable news outlet. You've got to buy a bunch of politicians. I mean,
do you ever wonder what the budget is for, say, Newsmuck?
No, I really never thought about it.
I bet you'd like about at least half, you know.
Or Pam Geller, or Michelle Malkin.
Yeah.
And that's why I said I think there's a deeper answer to it. You know, it's not just because, you know, we're sitting here with a $200 challenge on the table and, you know, trying to raise $150 of it and it ain't happening. It's not just that. It's that the right wing doesn't blink about understanding the necessity of getting all their points out there all the time. And they tolerate some really, really miserable, hateful garbage. Pam Geller. Michelle Malkin. Dinesh D'Souza, who, convicted felon, is still complaining that the real criminal is that one in our White House.
Thanks, Obama.
And how do we battle that? I mean, it's so entrenched. How do you get rid of it without full-scale violent revolution?
One thing would be for our side just to understand that there's meaning to this. I mean, I go back to, what was it, the Pittsburgh Netroots Nation I was at, where they were, you know, there are all kinds of, you know, panels about blogging and stuff. And I remember Guy James standing up and saying, that's great, you're blogging, but who's going to get the word out about what you're blogging? This was back when blogging was still a word. He said, you know, progressives, liberals need to support progressive media. And he said, we're here. We're the horn. We're here. We're actually streaming all of this so other people can hear it. Because nobody else would do it. And it was explained to us. I remember the day. I remember it very well. It was explained to us that, well, you know, that's just not the new media landscape. Well, look where the new media landscape has gotten us.
Yeah, that report after the initial report, I mean, it was funny, but it wasn't. You know, it's just... I asked my daughter, what do you think they'd do if it were reversed and three white guys were shot by one Muslim? What do you think would happen?
Brooga, 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 brooga.
Uh-huh.
ISIS. Well, no, look when it, look what happened when it was a psychiatrist at Fort Hood and he happened to be a Muslim.
Yeah.
The you know, the full tilt hissy was on. A sleeper cell has awakened and they're coming for us in our bedrooms.
Harumph.
Rumpf!
Has anybody got any dimes?
Dimes?
Never. Oh, it's from the movie.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
Somebody's going to have to go back and get a shitload of dimes.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually,
I didn't get a rumpf out of that guy. Rumpf!
It brought me back to your whole polarization that we've been talking about with a lot of these people.
What was that? I ramble, Michael. You're going to have to... You know.
Well, the whole idea of you've got psychotics up in, you know, and the high powers running everything, and a lot of people are being brainwashed into acting like that.
Polarization. Well, interesting you mentioned that.
It just came back to me. I was thinking about it when I was, you know, with these news stories and how it just filters down. I'd like to take those reporters aside and just get them away from everybody and go, really? You can sleep at night doing these things that you're doing? How does your conscience take this and say it's okay?
Well, another part of it, I think, is the conversation I had with a guy yesterday, and then I saw him again today. Yesterday, he was complaining about the politics, you know, all the stuff going on here in West Virginia and everything. And he said, I'm a registered Democrat, and I voted for Obama the first time, but I didn't get fooled the second time. And immediately I said, well, then you're not a Democrat.
Yeah.
But I didn't say that. He said, what I think the problem is we need to get God back in our politics. I'm like, no, I don't think that's really what we need. I think that's what we've got now, and that's why things are as bad. But I didn't argue with the guy because, you know how they are.
Good luck.
Anyway.
Well, hey, let me jump in a topic shift for a second. Betsy, I want to come back to what you had.
Hey, okay, thank you. I teach at a school that is, I don't know, something like 60% white. The kids are by and large wealthier than the kids who are less white. And there's a whole lot of privilege going on. And it's not normally something that I consider a whole lot, except insofar as teachers who assume that every kid has internet and every kid has TV and every kid, you know. I deal with it from that point of view, but I don't really deal with it from the systems point of view. Institutional stuff. Anyway, it's a group of eighth grade boys who are, now I have a son who's in a fraternity and he's a perfectly lovely young man. His friends seem very nice, but there's this group of boys who, the teachers call the frat boys, who are eighth graders, who get away with stuff.
Are they a clique?
They are a clique. Hold on, I've still got you on speaker. Let me figure this out. I can't figure this out. I don't know what I'm doing. Sorry, I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing. Anyway, can you hear me?
Yeah, we're hearing you fine.
Okay, so, anyway, a couple weeks ago, some group of these kids called a girl born in this country a wetback and asked her for her papers. And did not get in any trouble for it. They know who the four boys are. I don't know why they didn't get in trouble. But they didn't, not, absolutely no consequence. Out that the, a group of seventh and eighth grade girls have been taking pictures of themselves, their entire selves, and sending them to these boys.
By entire, you mean naked?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, wow. Just being clear here, not trying to be prurient.
Okay. Yes, sending pictures of themselves to these boys. And the boys, of the five, four of them are on the basketball team, and three of them are on the football team. All five are athletes.
And then, okay. We're talking eighth graders?
We're talking eighth graders.
Yeah.
So for both football and basketball are over. Everything's over but baseball. We actually have four seasons, and we're in the fourth one. So baseball is the only thing still going. Anyway, so there was some talk about it. Teachers caught wind. People started investigating. The high school boys football coach came down. He comes down to our school for one period every other day. He told the boys to erase everything from their phones, and he and one of our history teachers slash coaches taught the kids how to reform, taught the boys how to reformat their phones.
Jesus, did they learn nothing? Maybe they did. Maybe they learned something, Betsy. I was going to say, did they learn nothing from Steubenville?
This is what they learned from Steubenville. So it was this afternoon that we discovered why all of the boys' phones have nothing on them.
And did they also, okay, I'm just going to ask this. Did they also teach the girls how to format their phones?
So, no. So, I mean, that's where I went was, let's look at the girls' phones and see who they're sending messages to and ask the parents for their kids' cell phone records. Because I got to say, my kid, when he was in eighth grade, was a complete and total buffoon.
Well, I mean, that comes with the whole pubescent, yes. Prepubescent, early adolescent turf, does it not?
It does. And if he had been involved in anything like this and the school had asked me for his cell phone records, I would have printed them right there in the school office without looking at them first.
Were the parents notified at all?
I do not know. I have no idea where this thing stands, except that when I heard that, one of the history teachers I work with is one of the guys who taught the boys how to format their phones. I damn near lost it.
So the lesson is hide it.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the girls are learning that it's all about your body and, you know, I mean, some of these girls are just mooning over the boys, which is kind of, you know, a natural state of affairs, but oh, my God.
Raid.
Well, we all need to be careful here because we are on some gee turf, if I may so. And that is, and I am not in any way excusing any of this. I am not. Not for an instant, am I? But we might be shocked. We might be surprised. But that's on us. We, as parents, put these devices in the hands of children.
It's true.
And yeah. What are children? And it's not like there's a. Can you? Well, I guess you could, but how would you keep it that way? Disable the camera? Disable the video recorder?
When my son got in trouble with his cell phone, it ceased being able to do anything other than call. the police, me, his father, and his grandparents. I took away all other functionality. The camera did not
well,
work.
What, I think what disturbs me the most, Betsy, is the... Well, I mean, it's Texas, so God only knows. You know, they shoot horse thieves in Texas, but maybe football coaches get a pass. If law enforcement was to hear about this, and law enforcement was able to determine that some sort of underlying crime was taking place, then what the coaches did would, it seems to me, be some sort of obstruction of justice.
Yeah.
And, okay, so happens, but what happened? This is Texas, and our sports coaches are the people who teach the life lessons that sports imparts, a part maturation process and the understanding of the world in which they live. Right? And so, I mean, that's the part that gives me the
whole thing has
the horrors. No,
a second. The fact that they called one of my kids a wetback and had no repercussions.
Well, see, we haven't even gotten back to that. We all heard the photograph part and we went.
There's video too. I don't know. There's stuff went on Instagram, but now all the Instagram accounts are private.
Doesn't there seem to be a trend of this, Bob? You might even know the story, right here around home, Capitol High School. Just last week, was it last week?
Yeah, the Capitol High School principal's out of a job now.
Yeah.
And he's out of a job because somebody reported a rape to him. And he said, well, don't say anything about it for a week or so. Let's do a little internal investigation. Isn't that about the gist of it?
That's a true story, yeah. I know it was at least
And then there's the Charleston cop who who videoed his little daughter wearing all his coppin' gear while singing a Klan anthem. I don't know that that's directly on point with what Betsy's talking about, but look,
certainly the same mentality, is it not?
Well, it's coming back to a horrifying trend in parenting that having raised two daughters, the concept of my daughters texting their entire bodies naked to kids in eighth grade is horrifying.
So I had a couple of these kids in advisory last year. I gotta say, this year, instead of 14 kids, I've got 19, and they're all brand new immigrants, except for one. I am so much happier. I had some of these kids in advisory last year, and they were nasty pieces of work as seventh graders.
Well, what are they gonna be when they're 12th graders? I mentioned Steubenville, Ohio. They've already learned how to cover their tracks.
Yep.
And instead of intervening and saying this is unacceptable, this is wrong, this is objectification, this is exploitation, instead of doing any of that, they're saying, no, kid, don't, no, 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 uh-uh. You might be a good football player someday. We're going to cover some tracks here. Now, here's how you reset the phone.
Well, I'm also interested in, and I'm going to ask the eighth grade counselor on Monday. She wasn't there today. Are you talking to these girls? Don't break confidentiality. Don't tell me what's going on. Don't tell the officer what's going on, but are you talking to these girls? Is somebody talking to these girls about self-respect?
I think that very much needs to happen, but I despair a little bit, Betsy, because at that age, there's not an adult on earth. Well, maybe there's a few who has anything valid to offer them in their minds. I'll go ahead and ask the question. How many of these kids are in church every Sunday or synagogue on Saturday or mosque?
I would say not mosques. I'd say a good bunch. I'd say, I don't know all of the girls involved. I know 3 of the 5 boys involved. Yeah, I'm sure that they're in their...
They're rebelling.
I'm sure they're in church. I'm sure they're in church.
Okay, so the question then arises, and this isn't prayer meeting, and I'm not making sport of religion, but has organized religion then lost its moral force too?
Okay.
Well, I mean, organized religion has lost its moral force, and some branches of organized religion have lost their moral force. I don't know. I mean, I think that the number of, I think only the most liberal churches, synagogues, and mosques are having conversations about sexuality and sexual attraction that are not a list of don'ts.
Yeah.
I think dialogue about that. I know that one of the Jewish youth groups in town has some dialogue on that issue, and the other ones don't. There are 3. And I was involved, I was very involved with one of them for a while. And it was not the one that had any kind of dialogue. It was across the parking lot from us where they, you know, they deal with every, and it's the reform one. They deal with every issue head on.
And just, I'm not trying to take this afield, Betsy, but I want to compare this with something. We had a note from Bill in Helena a little bit ago. And, you know, up in Montana, the Montana legislature has been quietly going about the business of trying to sort out just how awful female people are. They had a dress code.
I heard the
built.
Yoga pants thing.
Well, this is the yoga pants thing, but there's more to it than yoga pants. And there's more at work here than yoga pants. The proposal, House Bill 365 in the House Judiciary Committee, was introduced in response to naked bicyclists who bicycled through Montana last August.
We got one in Austin, yeah.
So this is an amendation of the indecent exposure law. And in amending the indecent exposure law, any nipple exposure, including men's, is banned.
What?
Yes.
Wow.
But wait, here's where it gets really, really interesting. Any garment, okay, garment, pretty broad definition there, and this is a quote, that gives the appearance or simulates, okay, a person's buttocks, genitals, pelvic area, or female nipple. Now, that's being described as the yoga pants bill. Right? Because the nature of that clothing is such that one can play, well, if a guy were to be wearing it, you could play Guess His Religion, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at that closely, it becomes something entirely different. I suspect, just because of the way the legislation reads, it's actually an anti-transgender bill. What do?
Well, I think it's a lot of things.
What do drag queens wear?
Tight fitting clothes.
Prostheses. Which include a simulated, often include a simulated female nipple. So falsies are illegal under this bill. So is a pair of padded underwear to simulate the buttocks.
Wow. Small government.
Great. Good luck finding a bra anywhere these days that's not padded.
I guess Sarah Palin won't be visiting Montana anytime soon.
I mean, yeah, good luck finding a non-padded bra. But, Bob, you can't nurse anymore.
Do you see my point? We are... The right wing are obsessing. While the right wing are obsessing over this kind of stuff and who's going potty where, I'm going to go ahead. Is it okay if I guess that these two coaches probably are not members of Obama for America?
One of them I don't know at all, and the other one, I doubt it. One of them, I've met the guy once.
And what...
Our paths don't cross.
No, but the reason... I mean, I'm not mentioning this for prurient interest. It's they're having a hissy about the wrong stuff.
Yeah.
They're scared of the transgender. They're scared to death of the transgender community. And I think it's secretly because these right wing legislators are afraid they're going to wake up some Sunday morning going, "What in the hell is that?" But at the same time, you know, if you've got a couple of coaches, and I'll say because this is what it effectively works out to be, when you are teaching boys how to reformat the drives in their phones to wipe away all data, you are, by extension, aren't you kind of pimping out the girls?
Yeah.
Because then everybody, because that information is going to spread like wildfire.
So apparently, boys, the what was going around eighth grade, what I heard after school, is that eighth grade boys who wanted to be in the inner circle and, "Oh, I'm cool enough. Oh, that girl said it to me. Oh, I'm on her. I'm one of her Instagram followers. Oh, I saw so and so." Even though clearly they sent it to a specific limited number of boys. Now the boys reshared it, but. I mean, it's out there. It's just out there. It's like, you send something to five boys and they share it, the entire eighth grade seen it. Every kid with a phone seen it.
And so now let's backtrack to the ethnic slur.
Yeah.
Again, I guess by virtue of privilege, no consequences.
Nope. Two, three weeks ago, no consequences.
And how did the girl feel?
She was horrified. She was so upset.
And so how many links in the chain of command does this get ignored in?
AP and principal. I don't know that it went any higher.
Does the student have parents?
How many links in the chain of command? She's legal. Her parents aren't. They're not. They are not the kind of parents to come to school.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's,
Did I mention there was a two-tiered school here?
That's
probably a three or four-tiered school. No, we have, we on the ESL team work really, really hard at making all parents feel welcome and telling parents absolutely flat out, we never ask anyone's immigration status ever until you're applying for college scholarships. It is not an issue to the school district ever until you're applying for college scholarships. It simply does not matter. Like, we make a point of not asking. People, those of us who work registration are told at least three times. I trained people this year for registration. They actually had me work summer school registration just so that I could train all of the new staff at the International Welcome Center. Okay, here's what we do at registration. So I worked 3 days of registration. I trained three people. And I was told, make sure you tell them. Make sure you tell them this. Make sure you tell them that. These kinds of transcripts are okay. Mexican transcripts have to have lines on them, because if they don't have lines, the school year wasn't completed, you know. And make sure you tell them that we never ask this question until they're, well, for special ed kids, if they're in a jobs program, we ask the semester we're placing them in a job. And then for non-special ed kids, we ask for college applications, and that's it. And it's not applications, it's just the financial aid. So honestly, nobody asks except for the college counselor.
So therefore, you know, anything can happen. And there's not going to be anybody to speak up for.
I'm hoping my boss puts herself into this. I am not in a position to do so. I actually encouraged the girl to talk to the principal. Because she said she had talked to the AP and she had talked to the counselor. And I said, I'm really, really glad you did that. I'm really proud of you. Let's take this one step further. But I'm not in any position to go the assistant superintendent route. Although, actually, the associate superintendent was my principal 10 years ago. And if I did go that route, I would go directly to him. And I would say, remember you told us 10 years ago on your very first day at our school that we had the kind of kids whose parents did not, could not, would not, didn't know how to advocate for them, and that we had to be our children's advocate. I got a kid and I'm her advocate right now. Listen to this kid. I mean, I can probably do that. I'm not sure what standing it would have me in the school, but if it would help the kid. He actually listened. Gave us that chart. I remember that speech. He was like, he said 80% of the parents of this school will not advocate for their children because they're scared of school, or they're scared of American school, or they're scared of you, or they're scared of their kids, or they're scared of the cops, or scared of immigration. You have to advocate for your students. And I'll tell you, I took it to heart. I mean, it's...
Well, I think that...
I don't know how many other people heard him that
and
day.
It's and to be clear, it's the same kids.
Basically. Yeah.
Wow. I'm kind of flabbergasted. I mean, I feel, well, here, I'll let's do a little sharing. So one of the things I do is I go, you know, I talk to people when I'm out and about, because I just can't get enough talking in 3 hours a night. So a couple of weeks ago, one of the little convenience stores across the river got robbed, or attempted robbed. I'm not sure, Gerald, this story may have made it as far south as you. Or as far west, I guess. But a guy walked into the convenience store toward the end of the evening. The place closes. It doesn't stay open all night. And the clerk was behind the counter, and the person who walked in had a golf club and was trying to rob the place, at which point the robber ran out, and on the way smashed the windshield with the golf club, smashed the windshield of one of the witnesses, but left the golf club and fled on foot. okay, it's just another day, right? Well, upon being interviewed, and I went and double-checked, upon being interviewed, and the published report shows it, the clerk said that the would-be robber was black, which the for-profit media then dutifully repeated. Only it turns out there were two witnesses in the store who said, no, he wasn't. He was white. He couldn't have been any more white. And the clerk stuck to the story until eventually saying, yeah, all right, yeah, he was white. No retraction has ever been printed. The guy wasn't caught. But the story went around the community like wildfire of the black guy with the golf club who tried to rob the convenience store. And just because I've got the historical background that I have, I was horrified. Because this is the kind of thing that gets innocent people killed. And you, and if you're kind of, you know, if you've got a head for trying to figure things out, why would that person do that? Why? And any number of speculations come up. But the final analysis is that the law enforcement establishment, at least for a time, was looking for a black guy that didn't exist. And that this clerk was willing, would have been willing to hang out to dry. Out of fear? Out of conspiracy? Who knows? But you hear something like that, and it's just like the ethnic slur that Betsy's talking about here. You hear something like that, and you go, it's 2015!
Why are you going to pick up the phone, Bob?
Hey, you're there, Bill. You've been there all along.
Yeah.
Jump right exactly. In any time.
You guys are talking some serious stuff, guys. You know, we've had problems here where Sikhs have been robbed in a store because they were Muslims, you know.
Yeah, which they aren't.
Hey, expand on that just a little bit, Bob. You know, the clerk reported the police were looking for a black male, I assume, what the report was. What do you think would have happened if the Fayette County Sheriff had rolled through there and saw a black male walking down the road? What do you think would have happened?
I think he probably would have fallen against the vehicle, onto the vehicle, fallen flat on his face on the ground, God only knows what.
And maybe even been shot dead.
Trying to escape.
Exactly.
Well, it wasn't Tiger Woods, was it?
That was the thing. That was the line that was going around.
Yeah. Oh my God. Really?
Yeah.
I just thought I was being sickly sarcastic, which I'm capable of, you know.
But it was no. I mean, that was the remark that was made. Because Tiger played in a golf tournament one county over last July.
Well, sounds reasonable, doesn't it? Note the sarcasm.
Yeah, and I find it interesting that no retraction was ever put forward. At least that I was able to find via the outlet that published the story in the first place.
There probably wasn't one, so your search would have been in vain anyway.
Yeah, hey, Bill, you've been potted up, and I've been wondering when you were going to chime in.
Well, yeah, I've been really very interested in what I've been hearing tonight, so sometimes I keep my mouth shut, believe it or not. Well, I expose my stupidity constantly, you know, just to listen for a change. Well, it's the way I have to think. I've got enough stuff on my mind to have some guy buying some old stuff from the 70s and wants to bring it out on a label. It's exciting as hell because I've never had anything with real distribution, you know.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
That'd be cool.
The guitar player I was working with was superb. He was a great guitar player. And now he's got arthritis to a point where he can't play anymore. And he never recorded with me. He was really good. I mean, when we went to Detroit and we opened for Cream, you know, to be on the same stage right in front of those guys, you know, the master blues guitar player that they had, of course. And my guitar player was a 17 or 18-year-old kid, you know, but he could play that damn thing. Great player, and a great guy. When we did the two shows with Bonnie Raitt, she wanted him to come back to the hotel with her. And he said, no, I got to put the equipment away. And I'm thinking, why the hell didn't you say something to me? I would have taken care of the equipment, you know. Just to go anywhere with that woman would be enough to, you know, to cause me consternation, you know. I would have lost it, you know. Listen to babbling Bill over there, you know, because she is a great player, and she was quite attractive, by the way, too, you know. So, I mean, God almighty, that was 1975, you know. It was a thing we did for the Women's Indochina Peace Committee. Because I got involved with a lot of that kind of stuff, just to, you know, good for the image and, you know. But anyway, that's my story. But continue with what you... So, whatever the cave of this whole mess there... Because I couldn't catch the part about was the store owner a Muslim?
In what happened here, no. The store owner's just, I mean, it's just a chain of convenience stores.
Because most of those convenience stores, those guys could be charged with armed robbery. But that's a different story, you know. Some... Robbie with a six-gun, some with a fountain pen. In those cases, they use the fountain pen. Prices are not exactly, you know. They ain't giving away anything, that's for sure. I mean, hey, the American white.
Hey, Bob?
Yeah, sorry.
Wait, is your Facebook post today of St. Paul and the Broken Bones?
Yeah.
I mean, when I watched that, I saw that guy singing, I thought maybe that was a young Mr. Stress.
Yeah, you know, I thought the very same thing.
Burned out, huh?
No. This is just a hot little R&B band out of Birmingham, Alabama, called St. Paul and the Broken Bones, and they had an appearance on Letterman, I guess, last month. And wow, are they hot?
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very good. Yeah.
Hey, Bill, you said you opened for Cream and a guitar player, really good guitar player. That wouldn't have been Clapton, would it have been?
Yes, it was.
Wow.
Yeah, we did several jobs at the Grandy Ballroom in Detroit. The next trip was Steppenwolf was the top act, Three Dog Night was the middle act, and Bill was on the bottom of the bill. And the next time was MC5, and I had met those guys in the 60s, the riot year in Detroit. I had met the MC5. They were living in a burned-out office building, and they were good conversationalists, and they were heavy smokers of imported products, so I was really happy there, shall we say.
Hey, by the way, note, Betsy, a note coming in from you from Jenny in Wisconsin. She said, tell Betsy, she made me cry. So many kids with so many issues, and yet they do show up every day. Jenny says, thanks for your kindness and your work.
Well, I had a second grade teacher who coming back from lunch, she had a distinct smell about her. A smell that I didn't quite recognize at that age, but I smell that way myself enough in later years. So, because it's a tough gig, man. And this was an inner-city school. In fact, the only white face in the room sometime would be mine, which is no big deal. I remember the teacher said, are you William, Willie, or Bill? So, you know, you talk about cultural situation, you know. I said, well, call me anything. My mother called me Bill, you know, the old joke there. But that was true. I mean, I was, it was gifted to live in that neighborhood because I got over some of a lot of bullshit real quick with racism. And I had a downstairs neighbor who could fix southern fried catfish to, I still dream about eating this stuff. It was so good. Try to find it, you know. Because the people came up and they were up from the country. One guy came up from Mississippi, and he was a big fella and big man, and got a factory job, and he stayed with that company. It was TRW, Thompson and Rainbow Wooldridge, which was a big, they were big. And of course, who didn't make money during the Second World War? What factories didn't make money in this country? I mean, I don't think that war was arranged to make money for anybody, although would anybody be surprised if it someday came out that the whole thing was a put-up job, or who knows, you know, I give up. Can't think about it too much anymore. Hey, well, where are the other talkers on tonight? I don't hear anybody tonight. What's going on?
No, we're all here. Oh, Barbie's joined. Barbie has joined the Festival of Conversation. Hey, Barbie.
I hope she's here.
Well, I'm still waiting for my friend from
here she comes.
To me to get up, you know, to set me up with the Skype thing. Because I got a brand new computer sitting here, and they say my email doesn't even work. This thing sends out smoke signals. It's so damn old.
Be careful of those. Sometimes those aren't. Sometimes the only signals are that those are the ones that it's time to dial 911.
All electronics come with smoke installed, and when you let it out, they're ruined. Isn't that how the saying goes?
Yeah,
but you don't want to smell of burnt wiring.
I like that stuff.
Oh, when Appalachian Power decided to fry our water heater, that was a delight. That was just a delicious smell that lingered for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That was back when they were sending us only one leg of 2 legs of, you know.
Yeah. We built this county administration building back in 2004, 2005, and we had all these defective recess cans that we put, like, in the ceilings of the bathrooms and stuff. And they started blowing up all over the building after couple days being on. They just blow up, and then we'd have to go up and replace them. And you'd be up in it, like in a restroom. There's a little attic access. You get up in the restroom, and the whole area just stink like burnt wire. You know, you could hardly stand it. And then you'd have to, I mean, they really blow up. And then we'd have to re-pull all the wiring to the fixture itself and redo it. I've been a lot of stuff that burn up. I mean,
I miss the hours with a wrench in my hand and changing a starter. And then we used to treat, when you put them back together, you always treated it with a device that kept it from seizing, you know, never seize. We used to use that all the time. But one of my best friends that worked for Cleveland Electric, he was a lineman for them, and great guy, knew his work. And nowadays, they gave those guys early quits. And the guys they brought on, they don't want to pay them anything. Is that familiar, Sparky?
Sparky?
Linemen around here are fairly well compensated.
Yeah, they should be.
And they're all union. That's one thing Pacific Graft and Extortion has to deal with the IBEW.
Well, I know I appreciate them when it's 0 degrees out and snowing and cold and wind blowing and the power's out and they're out there trying to get it fixed. I know I appreciate them.
You'll just ask Jason, but he's a trouble man. He's got a dynamite service truck. I've seen pictures of it that Florida Power and Light gives him. He's a little bucket truck. But he just does residential outages and stuff. And he doesn't actually get too far into the upper stuff. He gets dead lizards out of the transformers once in a while.
Yeah.
According to what he said.
I was living on the west side of Cleveland, and we had one blow. And in fact, it was underground. This thing was, the manhole cover went up in the air from the force of the explosion. That area of Cleveland is the Lakewood Cleveland area is badly wired. My friend told me he had to work constantly over there on the stuff. It's the old story. Dennis would tell you about the streetcar wars in Cleveland in the early 1900s when these guys would lay track, and the next night the opponents would go out and pull their track and lay their own. I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, you talk about a capitalist battle. These guys were literally trying to cheat each other and outdo each other. So, and the problem that I see is we're getting back to this kind of capitalism again. Because they've always wanted to send the work overseas and get the cheapest labor that they could get. And I don't know what the hell they expect the rest of us to do here. I don't know. I don't get it. Does they want to bring us down to a poverty level in this country or what? Cynic that I am, just, you know, maybe the press personality, I don't know. But it's money is hard to come by today for the working man.
Then I'm watching the Ed show today, and Marco Rubio's joined on with this Indiana congressman. This sponsor some bill, kind of some pay act. Companies can pay workers more money if they feel they're worth more money outside the contract. I forget the name of it. I was looking at it earlier. But they're going after us. It changed the National Labor Relations Act if they passed it.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't give a shit about the other 94% of the people that are not in unions. But they have to pass a law to go after people that are in unions. It's crazy.
They're trying to undo the New Deal. They're not trying.
They're not trying, Bill. They have largely succeeded.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, just to back up, you know, we were talking about it all started with Betsy's story of her experience. Robert in Morgantown, when we were talking about the principal at Capitol High School going bye-bye, Robert in Morgantown reminded me of another story, and I don't know how this escaped my attention because I remember reading it. One of West Virginia's 55 counties is Wetzel County. Pardon the noise. I'm pulling the mic to me so that I can see the other computer screen. Charleston police said six people were arrested in a prostitution sting Thursday, including a county school superintendent and a pastor. Police said Wetzel County School Superintendent Dennis Albright, age 57, and Bradford Poe, age 48, a minister in Proctorville, Ohio, were both arrested in the sting overnight Thursday. Albright and Poe are charged with engaging in prostitution. Police said Albright told them he was in town to push a bill through the legislature. Albright is a former Braxton County School Superintendent. Oh, good God.
Well, you guys were talking about Steubenville, Ohio, right?
Well, yeah, and you know what we were talking about out of Steubenville, right, Bill?
There was a young man. There was a young football player that had some trouble down there. He probably was wrong. He did something wrong, and they kind of skimmed it over because he was a great young football player. That's the story I remember hearing a while ago. And Steubenville was a gang-connected town. Dino Martino dealt cards down there. I mean, cards. Dean Martin.
Yeah. That town centers on its high school football team, and well, we saw what came out of that. I'll never forget the evening that we had the clip of Candy Crowley and some reporter on the ground worrying about what a juvenile rape conviction would do to the future of that poor young man.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, we don't have that much time left in the program. I just wanted to mention that I wanted to put thanks out there. Thanks very kindly to our buddy Thomas Jug of Punch, who just kicked into to Tom's birthday challenge. Remember, our buddy Tom in the Bay Area is offering to double contributions up to $200 this evening. In celebration of his birthday. It's a Hobbit birthday where you give gifts instead of receive them. So we're making some progress. We haven't gotten there yet, but Thomas just kicked in and took us down to $95 to go. Cameron kicked in. Thank you, Cameron. And Gerald kicked in. Thank you. As did Haley. So thank you, one and all. We are at $95 to go on that challenge. On the double double challenge, for the first $100 to come in from anyone who has never contributed before, we got $25 to go on that. So that's a total of $400 to be contributed by our buddy Tom in celebration of his birthday. If we can get $25 more in contributions from people who have never contributed before, and $95 from folks who ordinarily do contribute. So that's a pretty big deal. And we've got 25 minutes to finish it off in. Sorry.
Can I finish that off in somebody else's other name?
How do you mean?
Well, I have one of the late-night Horn Malloy group guys that sent me some money to assist me in the Let's Buy Bob a Computer Fund.
Yeah.
His name's Michael Marriott. He's out of...
Oh, I know Michael. Yeah, 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 yeah,
yeah. Has he ever contributed to you before?
I can't remember offhand or not.
No. Because I was kind of holding his money for something else, but...
Well, either way is fine.
We can close that out right now if you want.
Okay.
$25?
Yep.
Okay, in his name.
All right, very good. So that completes the newbie challenge. And that leaves only 95 more to go. So thank you, Michael. Thank you very kindly.
Hi, folks.
Hey, Larry. I was wondering when you were going to chime in.
Well, I was just listening to all this stuff, and I know that this isn't a very adult way of responding. What I hear about all this stuff that's going on and, you know, everything, I feel like I've just, there's a term called compassion fatigue, otherwise mentioned by Duane as maybe you just don't give a fuck. And I just feel a lot of compassion fatigue around all of this stuff. It just, you know, I ought to realize that life is not perfect and that people make mistakes, but it just seems that there's this never, this is the same stuff that I talk about most of the time, but I just feel like it's really hard for me to have, you know, I don't know if my perspective is skewed or what, but I just feel really cynical about all this, because it doesn't appear that the country or the people in the country want to see anything change. And whether or not I didn't want to say anything today, but I guess I just feel after hearing all this stuff that
that's why this group exists, Larry. And just remember, when you're participating in the group, there's lots of people who participate vicariously and never say a word. And if you're saying something, odds are there's somebody in the Horn Family Commune congregation who's feeling it too.
Yeah, but aren't we supposed to be wise enough at this point to have some broad understanding of what human behavior is and how people, and have some degree of empathy for people's, you know, just have a broader perspective, or have a more compassionate or a more empathetic.
Toward what?
I don't know. Toward people's. Okay. Well. Anyway.
No, I'm not being short with you. I'm trying to.
I guess toward people's stupidity and toward people's short-sightedness and toward their inability that they have to deal with life in a psychologically healthy manner and that kind of thing.
Well, that would all depend on perspective, Larry. I mean, what I find offensive.
You're not live on the computer.
That's what I've just heard. I'm not even seeing any buffering here. Let's continue.
Well, just to finish what I was going to say, it doesn't really. I mean, it's all part. It's all perspective. I mean, what some people find morally wrong, other people are just fine with, and that's kind of the way it is. You just kind of find what works for you.
Well, and but the times themselves are confusing. And when I talk about them, I guess a lot of times they come out in either sarcasm or frustration or anger. But, you know, when I've remarked over the last couple of weeks, we have, because it's like being hit in the face with a cold sopping wet towel. To realize that, you know, we're a country. We just are. We have become a country that cannot agree that preventing children from getting preventable childhood illnesses is a good idea. And the funny thing is, we had agreement on that. There was no disagreement on that. But now we can't reach consensus on it.
Yeah, even just, Hartnett had on Kennedy Jr. today talking about how the freaking vaccines are bad. It's just ridiculous.
You know, but you know, another one of those moments is, and I don't know if it hits you guys the way it does me. Or hits is the wrong word. I don't know if it occurs to you the way it occurs to me. And I'm not saying I'm anything special. I think I'm probably just something weird. But in those still little moments when I and when I'm in my thinking place, and I look up and I go, huh, and realize I, because I think former generations in this country would be kind of stunned too, that we're a country now where three young people get a bullet in the head over a parking space, and we have news reports where it is reported, well, you know, there was another outburst over a parking space today. You know, God damn! Really? And that's why I reeled off all those countries, because there's all, lest we become U.S. centric, myopically so, and think that the behavior of this country is the behavior of the rest of the country. It ain't. Most of the rest of what we refer to as the civilized world does not behave this way. And what that means is that we are engaged in a pretty significant retrograde motion. You know, I talk about living in a collapsing empire. This is how collapsing empires behave, and what's out there coming at us ain't good. If we're shooting each, if we've got people shooting other people over Skittles and parking spaces, when the real serious climate change stuff comes on, it's going to be past horrifying. The other day, which jackass Republican was it? Well, President Obama's worrying about climate change instead of Muslims. Well, the reason the Defense Department considers climate change to be one of the greatest national security threats this empire faces is because when its real effects are finally felt, it's going to be a shakeout and a breakout and a breakdown the likes of which most of us can't even conceive. I mean, Mad Max stuff. Atonal music.
Yep.
And so if you, Larry, and I'm not yelling at you, I'm just, you know, it's just me. But if you, Larry, are suffering compassion fatigue, well, you just baptized it with a name. Lots of people are feeling it.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Betsy made me go into the time machine when she's at eighth graders. I mean, 50 years ago, I was in the eighth grade. And we were more worried about the space race and the Vietnam War.
Yeah, or right, and 50 years ago, an eighth grader probably knew how to sit if he wasn't playing baseball. And I'm sorry for not saying she, but it was 50 years ago. If he wasn't playing baseball, he knew how to sit on the bench or in the or when the family went to a ball game, knew how to sit there and keep score on the baseball game.
Did so well on that quiz yesterday because
I'm sorry, Larry.
Mute, Larry.
Oh. They were actually watching the standings, or Bill's told us about when he was a kid, listening to NFL games on the radio. Well, it is a different world, and that's what I was getting at earlier when I said that we have to be careful as adults in how we respond to this, because I do, you know, having kids and having had kids and having teenagers, and having watched them come up in this in this culture, and adolescence is never easy. Adolescent cave people did not have it easy because it's hard to grow up, and that's why ancient cultures developed things like coming of age rituals for males and females to sort of try to ease that process along, but. None of us in this conversation came of age in a time when we could simply take a photograph of our genitals and send it around the world in a second. That means something.
But why would people want to do that in the first place? It seems stupid. It seems juvenile. There's no reason for it. Why would you want to
send it? But Larry, have you ever heard the old phrase, playing doctor? Have you ever heard the old phrase, you show me mine, and you show me yours, and I'll show you mine, that little kids get up to? and got up to in former ages? Well, this is the digital version of that, and the world is the potential audience.
Yeah, but they're 13.
Yeah.
I remember the name of the girl.
Play doctor just
let me touch her boobs.
Well, anyway, when I was in high school, if the vice principal caught you smoking a joint and cutting class out by the bus stop because you didn't want to be in school and you wanted to have, some time to toke, you were suspended. That's what was considered to be really horrible.
Yeah.
Really, really horrible. And, people got punished for it. I thought it was really ridiculous, but the vice principal didn't think it was ridiculous. And now we've got this stuff going on. So, I don't see where the culture's getting any better. And if we're out here in the Horn Chat and we're discussing this stuff, then why is that a naive response for me, but I just don't understand why there aren't more of us out there. And if we realize that the culture is going to hell in a handbasket and we're going the wrong way, why are we able to seize the momentum and change it?
Well, because on the one hand, the answers are not easy, and on two, you're up against a corporate culture that promotes it. All right?
Yeah.
For instance, the business with the Betsy was talking about with the photographs, well, these kids were not technologically up in the first place, because if they had been, they wouldn't have been using Instagram or texting. They would have been using Snapchat, because Snapchat exists exactly for this purpose. You take a picture, you send it to somebody, they view it, and once they've viewed it, it's gone. Because and somebody out there is a brand new shiny billionaire for coming up with the Snapchat app, and I'm sure Apple or Google or somebody will buy Snapchat if they haven't already. And so there are these apps that are constantly rolling out to, on the one hand, protect privacy, but which on the other hand enable some pretty outrageous behavior, at least in the terms in which we define it. Because here's one more thing. Those eighth graders Betsy's talking about, they have, they're not eighth graders who've grown up in a vacuum. They're eighth graders who have grown up looking up to 10th graders, who have grown up looking up to 12th graders, who have grown up looking up to people who are now sophomores in college, who grew up looking up to people who are college seniors now. And this technology has been available to all of them. So it is all learned behavior. It's not, they're just, hey, I got a smartphone. Let me take a picture of my... No. They do not view it. And I think that's where the challenge comes in terms of a response. They do not view it with the sort of, oh my God, horror that we do. And so when you sit there and try to explain to them, honey, don't do this. It's not just the general adolescent, oh, God, I'm being lectured by the rents again. It is that who was it? Was it Abby Hoffman in the 60s who invented the term generation gap?
He invented some stuff, but he took a lot of the stuff from his peer group.
That's fine. The reason the generation gap that the youth of the mid to late 60s and early 70s were complaining about is mild, is pale, is tepid, is in fact almost funny compared to the generation gap that exists not between, a 52-year-old dad and his 18-year-old daughter, but between a 29-year-old and a 16-year-old. That is how fast the world is changing, the technological world.
But Bob, girls that are sending nude pictures of themselves to boys strike me as probably very low in self-esteem and coming from very bad households.
You cannot, no. Is that you, Michael? You cannot make that assumption.
I mean, I
don't think you can I'm not arguing with you, but I don't think you can validly make that assumption.
Why?
They do it because they can.
Well, there's that.
That's why they do it.
Well, then there's
the same reason that we did mischievous things when we were eighth graders, because we could.
I bet if you looked in there.
Well, you have a 14-year-old daughter. What are you doing?
Or something. They're just.
I mean, okay, so 11 years ago, when I was on the air in Beckley, I used to interview authors and stuff, and I found an interesting story, and the author sent me free books to give away. I had a program, and it just caused all over, you know, good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian Beckley. I had the author on the show of a book called Generation Slut. And slut stood for sexually liberated urban teens. And in that case, urban did not mean what urban means now. It just, this was somebody who was just writing about the behavior of the teenage culture of 2004. And you know, all the earmarks were there of what we're seeing and hearing and reading and now. But the one thing that you can never get across to kids, or it is hard to get across to kids, is that where the internet is concerned, nothing ever goes away. Everything is forever. And, you know, the Sony hack proved that. And the hack of, who was it, Jennifer Lawrence's and some other celebrities, Instagram accounts? I can't remember. The Apple hack was, or was it the Apple hack? Yeah, it was the iCloud hack, wasn't it? Proved that you may think it's gone. It ain't gone. You may think it's protected. It ain't protected. And I personally think, I'm filibustering, I guess, but I personally think that some of this is an offshoot of a culture that says, well, hell, the government's already collecting all this data anyway. Why is it some big deal if a boy that I like has a picture of my boobs?
I don't know if they think that far ahead, or if they think that in that sophisticated.
I don't think it. I'm not giving them. No, Larry, I don't think it. I don't think it has to be consciously thought, Larry. I think it just exists as like a carrier wave to a radio signal, just underneath.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's remember, we talked, Michael, you mentioned, you know, the girls are low on self-esteem. That's entirely possible. But whether they're low on self-esteem or whether they've been raised in, you know, good families or wealthy families or poor families or whatever, what they've been raised in is in a culture that is absolutely obsessed with transient, fleeting fame.
Yeah.
And they've been raised in a culture in which, look, the boys, you know, so the girls are sending pictures. Don't think the boys aren't sending pictures back. Right? Just to be a little bit complicated, let's ask this question. Would you rather, and it's not always necessarily an either or. Would you rather have these kids sending pictures of their genitals to each other, or would you rather have up the holler somewhere, exploring them up close and personal, which also happens? Witness the teen birth rate.
Yes, but I don't know about you, but when my girls were 12 and 13, I pretty much, between my wife and I, we knew where they were every second of every day.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just have a hard time believing that a kid that's confident, has good self-esteem, and all of this is going to just willy-nilly send off nude pictures of themselves to somebody. Now, if they're a boyfriend, girlfriend, I get it, okay? But if this is just boys that they know at school and they're just sending them nude shots of themselves, I have a real hard time thinking they're just doing that.
I think you'd be surprised. And remember, with a smartphone, you can know exactly where Precious Lumpkin is.
Yes, exactly.
You know, Precious Lumpkin just left the dinner table to go wash her hands in the bathroom.
I always warned my daughters I was going to reinvent the chastity belt with GPS, alarm, you know, call the cops.
Are we talking about, like, Foursquare and all those apps that where people...
There's a million of them.
You can do location on your iPhones. There's a reason why we went with iPhones with our daughters, because you can instantly get location on it.
Yeah. Well, okay.
But anyway, I got to boogie and take my daughter to dinner, so y'all have a good night.
Well, thank you, Michael.
Have a good time with your daughter.
Thank you for participating in the conversation. I want to thank everybody for participating in the conversation this evening. Thank you, Bill in Cleveland. Thank you, Gerald. Thank you, Carol Abel. We didn't hear from you, but we knew you were there. Thank you, Barbie. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Betsy, for bringing a compelling topic to the table this evening. Thank you, always, Sparky, for your expert and very capable efforts in moderating the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. And, hey, big thanks going out to Darlene in Connecticut. I have to say Connecticut now since Darlene has taken notice of it. Thank you, Darlene. Darlene finished off in one fell swoop the remainder of the of Tom's birthday challenge. So both his birthday challenge and his newbie challenge have been met. If you participated in the newbie challenge, your money got tripled, not doubled. Isn't that cool? So a big round of applause. Let's see, in terms of having, that's about 2.5 have a show on me's on Tom's part. Thank you very kindly. So, and by the way, a reminder that the Horn Malloy Skype chat group will continue off air, and it will continue after midnight Eastern time when Malloy finishes. If you've never participated in the After Hours Horn Malloy Skype chat group, it is a rousing good time. Thanks, everyone. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org. And thank you, all of you, for getting busy out there. I saw it happening today, advocating for passage of the ACACT. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.